Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
I feel like we've been doing funny voices, and now I'm...
I know. Do like, funny but low-key.
Will somebody get us another drink?
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater ASMR Happy Hour. I'm Tommy.
Side-splitting, honestly. And I'm Jimmy. This is the only musical theater podcast with soju sip.
And MTI scripts. Here, we take apart your favorite shows, muddle them together with a shot of buffoonery, and pour you a refreshing glass of musical theater conversation. Jimmy, what are you drinking today?
I am drinking...
Was that it? You're just drinking?
I'm just drinking, just to get through.
I saw a TikTok the other day. That said, are you a cishet white, are you a cis heterosexual white man? Do you find yourself afflicted by this? Well, then you might be entitled to, and that was it. Oh no, I screwed it up. It just said you might be entitled. That was the joke. Isn't that a funny joke?
Both work. There's no liquids mentioned in this show.
They make a joke about throwing a kegger.
Great. Well, there you go.
Hey, we
That's
had a
what I'm drinking.
We had a really baffling and confusing quiz question last time, didn't we?
We absolutely did. I have to try and read it again.
Good luck.
Okay. I should put some like fun background music. Yeah. I should have done that last time, shouldn't I? Yeah. Or like, yeah, hit me with some classic royalty free tracks.
I was going more like Careless Whisper.
That was Careless Whisper. A classic. Anyway, looking for love? Boy, have we got the show for you. We're developing a dating app named after our next show. It pairs you with another performer who has played the exact same character in this show. Just hear these rave reviews from our two happy couples. That was shit.
Everyone, we're so sorry. We've been doing this for 99 episodes.
99, exactly.
You got to give us one or two terrible quiz questions, or 10 or 12. Who knows?
Hey, it's future editing Jimmy here. I'm speaking to you from the future. Ooh. I just realized that we never actually explained what that quiz question was all about. That incredible quiz question. Basically meaning that Ben Platt and Noah Galvin and Taylor Trench and Ben Levy Ross, I was going to say are all dating, but no, they are two separate respective couples. But they have all played Evan. And that's weird, isn't it? Because, you know, same part, same show, a lot of love. So that's what that meant. Sorry for the confusion. Anyway, back to the show. Yeah, but hey.
Hey, it's Dear Evan Hansen. Dun, 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 dun.
Dear Evan Hansen, we've been way too out of touch. Things have been crazy, and it sucks that we don't talk that much. But I should tell you that I think of you each night. I rub my nipples and start moaning with delight.
Why would you write that?
I'm just trying to tell the truth.
This needs to be perfect. These emails have to prove that we were actually friends. Just, I'll do it.
I gotta tell you, life without ya has been hard.
Hard.
Has been bad.
Bad.
Has been rough.
Kinky.
And I miss talking about life and other stuff.
Very specific.
Shut up.
I like my parents.
Who says that?
I love my parents, but each day's another fight. If If I stop smoking drugs, then everything might be alright.
Smoking drugs.
Just fix it! If I stop smoking crack.
Crack?
If I stop smoking pot, then everything might be alright. I'll take your advice. I'll try to be more nice. I'll turn it around. Wait and see. Cause all that it takes is a little reinvention.
I've realized a fatal flaw in our quiz question structure is it's always in the title of the podcast. So by the time...
I mean, we realized that. I think we realized that on the first quiz question, which I think might have been Spring Awakening. And we were like, oh, wait, this is pointless. But people weirdly get they get into it.
I'm glad they do.
You know?
Dear Evan Hansen.
It is fun.
It is. I have fun with it.
Yeah.
Welcome to our Dear Evan Hansen podcast. Hey, Dear Evan Hansen, if it's a show you haven't heard of before, that's fascinating, but go listen to it, maybe. I do want to start this off. There, obviously, with Dear Evan Hansen, a content warning about discussion of suicide and some mental health issues. I think this show, in its actual incarnations, does a really bad job of having any kind of content warnings around it, and it's the kind of show that needs it. So I want to be better. Content warning, suicidal ideation, suicide, and mental health issues.
Indeed. But hey, music and lyrics by Mr. Pasek and Paul.
The Golden Boys. And a book,
you get The Golden Boys, like, very much so. And the book by Mr. Stephen Levinson.
Yes, it opened in Broadway, on Broadway in 2016. These are few and far between. I saw the last preview performance of Dear Evan Hansen before it opened
you
in 2016.
You absolutely did.
It would go on to win the Tony for Best Musical, and then it opened the West End in 2019 and won the Olivier. And I believe started a tour or has a tour planned.
Over your way?
I believe so.
Nice.
Who knows?
We have no sign of that yet. Well, exactly. I think it will open back up in London again, and it will do extremely well. I have no doubts.
No doubt the same in the States as well.
Absolutely. But right, do you want to? You've seen it.
I've seen it. I'll give it a go.
In the flesh.
Yeah.
Not that I have it. Seen it in the flesh.
You've seen it in the false flesh. What's the
the
slime?
Like the Doctor Who, like flesh, the, like the.
I mean, I was gonna then say the slime tutorial flesh, which also.
Oh yes, yes.
Which also would fit a Doctor Who episode.
It would. Yeah. Anyway.
Dear Evan Hansen is the story of a senior boy in high school, Evan Hansen, who has some unspecified form of either social anxiety or neurodiversity that he's getting therapy for. And one of the tasks his therapist tasks him with is writing a letter to himself talking about how it's going to be a great day. His single mom insists that he writes this letter as he heads off to his first day of high school. We also meet the family of Connor Murphy. Connor is his family doesn't like him. They seem to have some problems. It's alluded to that he's a bit of a pothead. He's also the school bully. And they all go to the same school. Evan is in love with Connor's sister in a very unrequited and distanced way, which he references in this letter that he writes to himself about how today is going to be a good day on the school computer. He hits print, and in an unfortunate Three's Company style way, Connor Murphy finds this letter and thinks Evan's being kind of a creep and steals it away from him and pushes him to the ground. Later that week, Connor Murphy dies by suicide, and it's a big, obviously a huge event at their school. And Connor's parents find the letter that Evan wrote in Connor's things and assume that it is Connor's suicide note. This mistake snowballs into a series of lies that Evan perpetuates about how him and Connor were secretly best friends and had this secret email account, which then turns into a social media campaign about being found and not being alone in this world. And eventually, of course, it all implodes in on Evan. And then the musical ends. Yeah?
Yeah, pretty good.
Did I miss any big beats? Evan gives a speech that goes viral on the internet. The whole thing is kind of inspired.
They raise a lot of money.
They raise a lot of money.
A memorial orchard.
Yeah, it's
and Evan gets the girl.
Evan does get the girl halfway through. And we might talk about some of that manipulation. But a
yes.
contemporaneously set show, contemporary and contemporaneously yep. set.
And completely original.
Completely original, which we haven't seen
which we always like to applaud.
A long, long time. Very informed by, you know, quote, you picture my air quotes, social media these days.
Yes.
And our kind of laptop iPhone informed Kickstarter, GoFundMe, viral video, feel good mm-hmm. kind of world. The set design and the sound design for this thing are stunning. The whole background yeah. is filled with these kind of blurry images of social media scrolling past and different bleeps and bloops and ringtones that
yep.
you know have become the underscore for our life. And for that, it is very, very cool.
And as well, like it's not done in a way that is like, look, it's a text message.
Yeah.
Facebook poke. Do you know what I mean? It's not done. It feels authentic. It doesn't feel
it feels annoying. It feels authentic, and it does. And it's hard to say because we are kind of in a stasis of how we, you know, maybe in the past 15 years, we haven't really reengaged with how we do text messages and these sorts of things. Like there hasn't yeah. been a new revolution in that. But a lot of other pieces of media, when they approach any kind of contemporary technology, it becomes dated very quickly. This one yeah. does a very good job, I would say. And like this is a pet peeve of mine when shows do this poorly. This one does a very good job of having a decent understanding and representation of how normal humans interact with this technology.
Exactly. Which yeah, you have to applaud it for. But should we dampen the applause?
Let's go.
And
let's
start at the very beginning.
I think we're gonna rip this off like a band-aid. Play some music and then we'll talk about it.
Out of the sun if you keep getting burned. Step out of the sun because you've learned. On the outside, always looking in, will I ever be more than I've always been, cause I'm tapping on the glass, waving through a window. I try to speak but nobody can hear, so I wait around for an answer to appear while I'm watching people pass. I'm waving through a window. Can anybody see? Is anybody waving me?
I wish I had sound effects. Right, how come we're not one of those podcasts that have a board?
That has a
soundboard. People have a soundboard.
They do, and I've looked into it. It's hard to do just with our setup.
And yeah, because we're not together, and we also, it's not one live take.
I know, so like Mabimbam does, I think Justin has a soundboard on his end, and it's right. hard to, because you'd want it to be a separate track, right? That still
yeah.
goes through the Skype so the other people can hear it. Like, we ran into some of this with Unsung Heroes about how do we play music for each other but not have
yeah,
it
true.
Burned into our track. But I've put a lot of thought into it.
Okay, thank you for that, at least. I didn't. I just was like, I want one. I want to play sound effects. Ha ha ha. Anyway. So normally our catchphrase is, we'll come back to that later. We felt like we did enough of that with the frogs. So
we want to put this. We want to put some of this stuff up front. I've been trying this yeah. out. Old and broke Andrew Lloyd Webber, or old and tired Andrew Lloyd Webber, new and wired Pasek and Paul or Dear Evan Hansen. I don't like this show. I don't like this show.
Yeah,
for a lot of reasons.
I, you know, I don't like saying those words.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But what I would say is, I think this show could be better.
Yeah, it's fair.
Right.
But we're trying something new. We wanted to talk about these things up front because yes. they often inform some of the other stuff we talk about.
Exactly. And what I will say as well is, like, we appreciate that this show is not only liked by a lot of people, but like, It has affected a lot of people in a very positive way.
In a very positive way. And I think this will come up and hopefully will shine through our conversation. Like, when I saw the show, yep. it made me cry. Like,
yeah.
this show deeply moved me when I saw it in the theater. And then
yeah.
upon closer and further examination, there have been a lot of things that have really bugged me about it. And I yeah. do, you know, in my new leaf of letting people like things and trying and letting myself like things. I do find myself struggling against that in this world, right? Do I not like it because it is popular? And I think on self-assessment, that's not the case. I think I don't like it for legitimate problems that I really, really find with the show. And that some, there's, God, we are up against the wall with this one, Jimmy. There's so much discourse and discussion about this show because it is so popular.
And you're 10 years behind.
Exactly. And so,
as well. Like, we're talking, you know what I mean?
Right. We're going to be reiterating points that I think a bunch of people stepped upon, probably less eloquently than they have done. But away we go.
But that's the show you pay for, kids.
Exactly. Enough hedging. Let's talk about mental health. It sucks that they never tell us what's up with Evan.
What's going on? I completely agree. I don't think there would be any harm in it, right?
Well, I think the reason they're doing it is because since they don't want to offend anyone, they figure if we present this vague representation, then it will be impossible for anyone to be offended because we never really said what it was.
But in actual fact, obviously the opposite.
Right. It somehow makes it more damaging.
Because what's happened is people fill in the blanks, mm-hmm. right? And when you have as strong a fandom as this show has, things that don't exist become canon.
Yeah.
So suddenly Evan has a social anxiety disorder.
Right.
And that's just kind of generally accepted. And so if you say something contrary to that, actually somehow you're wrong. When in actual fact, you're not wrong in any way.
Right. I was paying attention for it and analyzing it this time through, and mentioning that Evan has anxiety is the closest they get to naming what's up with him specifically. Now, I will say, Ben Platt and the actors that come after him are portraying something. And you know, it's hard to talk about this stuff because it goes through different namings and you want to do it good justice, but is it some form of neurodiversity? Is it simply an adolescent social anxiety, which is pretty common and often, you know, does peter out as you get older?
Absolutely.
And they never specify. They make mention that he's on some form of medication, which he stops taking halfway through. They never say what it is. We know he's in some form of therapy, but we never see the therapy in the show. And like, I get that musicals have to move fast and have to cover a lot of plot really quickly. We could spend a little more time on what is like the inciting incident for how Evan is who he is.
I think so. I think it would be really important. So I think I personally will be making a lot of comparisons to Next to Normal as we go through.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair because
although trying to be Next to Normal in a lot of ways.
Well, there's loads of comparisons that can be made. I mean, there's what, 7-8 years in between the two of them. But Next to Normal was really one of the first musicals to openly talk about mental health, and it did it in an extremely frank but good way. Do you know what I mean? And it was a known fact that Diane had bipolar disorder.
Right.
And that she was on many different treatments for that.
And it showed that the creators did the research into the type of neurodiversity she had.
Absolutely. And like it was an education. I learned a lot from it.
I mean,
and I don't think necessarily the same thing is true here.
No, not at all. They kind of, you know, the writing staff kind of took their vague idea of what this might be and wrote a character around it. And it comes off as lazy. It really does.
Yeah. And I think at times it can come off as a little bit dangerous.
Yes, exactly.
Because now this is kind of where the tricky stuff begins, because a lot of people put the character of Evan on a pedestal as like, there is me on a stage.
Right.
I am seeing me on a stage.
Right.
And when you start to denigrate someone in that capacity, then a lot of people think, you're saying that to me.
Right. Exactly.
And that isn't the case, because I certainly wouldn't imagine that a lot of the people who say Evan is me have done nearly anywhere close to the damage that he has done.
It feels like, and this is, you know, this is us subbing in ourselves in these things, but like there is good and bad and accurate and inaccurate gay representation on stage, right? And I think we have reactions to that too. Whatever last call we talked about James Corden and the prom.
Right. Yeah.
And there's I can see a parallel line here, right? And it's that balance of like representation matters, and this is neurodiverse representation on stage, which is great, and
absolutely,
you want it to be better.
Well, yeah, and I think you want it to be like authentic,
right?
And real, because obviously there's a lot. I don't know. I'm gonna go very frank right at the top. But as someone with an anxiety disorder,
yeah,
do you know what I mean? Now the only difference is here, and I've thought about this a lot, is I'm a 30-something-year-old mm-hmm. with an anxiety disorder. I was also
17, 18 when you were a senior. Yeah,
I was also 17-year-old with an anxiety disorder as well. I just didn't know as much about it then,
right?
And I didn't know how to help myself and mm-hmm. any of that. But I think one of the things that I guess disappointed me straight off the bat with this is that Evan is getting help,
right?
He is in therapy. And he is on meds, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
If they're working for him,
right,
then that's a really, really positive thing. And again, me as a young person with an anxiety disorder, seeing that, I would be like, hey,
yeah,
that's role modelly.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But then he comes off the meds.
Right. For no reason.
And does lots of very, very bad things.
Right.
That he kind of blames on his whatever.
Right, right, exactly.
You know what I mean? And so that, I would be like, can't relate.
And it's kind of explained away and justified through his anxiety. And
yes.
That's not a great look. Like,
no.
You
because,
know.
Like, again, as someone with it, I would never want to be defined by my, like, very much the opposite. If I could leave it in the dust,
right?
Oh boy,
yeah.
Would I? Like, absolutely. But it does seem like this is being used as a shield,
right?
And I find that just a bit disappointing.
And because they never outright even go into what's up with Evan,
yeah,
we're already a step back from that, right? Like,
yep.
I've seen write-ups about, like, is Evan on the autism spectrum? Like,
yep.
all sorts of different things, which there are justifications for. And it's a damn shame that the show is, like, so cowardly that it can't just come out and say it.
I know.
Like, 2016, you can write characters like this better. Like, when did Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime come out, right?
Oh, like, my God, like, years and years and years before. You know what I mean? Like, that, absolutely. Yeah, I do. I completely agree. And I think another kind of bastion in the same boat here is with Connor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Right, because there's loads of parallels you can draw between these two characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to the play's credit,
yeah,
it sets that up.
Right.
And then they lose that whole thing
right
altogether.
Away. Yeah.
That's a big shame.
One of the most beautiful and promising scenes in the show is the actual only scene that real Connor and Evan are in together. In the
yep.
computer lab where he takes the thing and he signs his cast. And there is this like tension there, right? Connor's been painted as this like unilateral bully and is perhaps legitimately doing something nice. But then he gets set off by what he considers is a bad joke about, mm-hmm. misinterpreting this letter and then runs off. And then like from like a story structure standpoint, the next thing that happens is, Connor dies by suicide. And the implication is that it's this letter that set him off. Right. Which is perhaps that's bad.
It's really bad. And then the next time we see him, he's a joke.
Right. He's a joke.
He's the butt of a joke.
And he's fake himself. Right. He's a figment of Evan right. and Jared's imagination.
And we never know the real Connor ever again.
Right.
And
like,
we never know the real Connor.
All we hear are the big paintings of his family, whether it's in Requiem or some of the other scenes about like
yep.
him being a psycho and a maniac. And like,
yep.
God, this stuff, Jimmy, like it pisses me off. I hate this kind of shit. I hate the, like, you, like, God. Oh, the joke.
Like,
the joke that set me off re-going through it this time when...
Are we about to say the same thing?
Is it school shooter chic?
Is school shooter, like, come on.
Like, and pardon me, but fucking tone deaf. How fucking dare you?
That needs to, that needs to come out of the
And as
script.
A laugh line, like, still an awkward laugh line, but a laugh line? How fucking dare you?
Absolutely not.
Like, this is not the room for comedy. This is not the place for comedy. And, like, I can see the justification about, like, well, that's why Connor is the way he is, because he faces this kind of bullying. Bullshit. Give it more dimension or cut it from your fucking show.
Absolutely.
Connor's
And I hope it does get
cut. I hope it does.
Cut. You know what I mean? There's
Connor's,
no there's
Connor's
no space
portrayal
for that.
In the show, and, you know, like, this is a writing problem. The actors do a fantastic job. Like, is tone deaf, one note, and informed by a, like, terrible, dated 1990s view of the troubled teenager that has been a problematic viewpoint of adolescence for the past 20 years in this country.
Right.
And, like, that is enough reason alone for, like, me to be really, really flamey about this show.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, all the way they deal with Connor dying by suicide. And, like, and this is, you know, you can smell. So Pesk and Paul are they a lot of this has been scrubbed because of how popular the show has been and how much of a bad look this is. But early on, you could find articles about Pesk and Paul wanted to write a show that was almost a parody of viral Kickstarter reactions to tragic events.
Exactly.
Which, like,
because it was based on, I think it was based on Benj's life.
Yes, and, like, a similar event that,
like,
happened
an experience
in his school
that he had. Yeah.
Which, like, I don't want, you know, don't want to fault that. People come from all sorts of different places, but, like, it's a shitty topic for a piece of art, like, parodying this sort of trauma and this tragic event, like, you know, and poking fun at it.
Yeah, I think that it's the poking fun. Like, I think it's a fascinating.
Sure.
Like, I really think it's a fascinating. And, like, it isn't discussed at all, and it is so contemporaneous.
Right.
But, it's not like Broadway Jokesville.
Right.
You know
exactly.
I mean? It's not like Broadway mainstream.
And you can see they pivoted and turned, but, like, there's still so much left in all of what is her name, Alana's character. About, like, you know, oh, we were acquaintances and, like, he's changed my life. And you can see they still must insist on poking fun at how people deal with tragedy. And, like, you know, pardon me, but God damn it, Jimmy, I have taught kids who have had friends who have died by suicide and have to deal with this shit. And I've been in communities that have had to deal with this shit. And how dare you, Pasek and Paul, like, drives me nuts.
It's really like, and I think that's the core of my frustration is that there is so much really complex, interesting, good material in this show.
Yeah.
But it's just really poorly.
It misses the mark so bad. Like I have faculty room discussions about how, like, you know, there are theories, and I would put full faith into this, that we're going to look on things like Facebook and Instagram and our kind of social media addiction in 20 years the way we look at nicotine and cigarettes now. That
absolutely,
like,
and I pray that we do.
It was this, you know, this terrible, misguided, unregulated, you know, a drug for the brain that has warped
how
we exist. And, like, you can see it. And you're right. There's so much to explore there. And this is a show that is pretending to do it. But it does so, like, with such a big bat and so haphazardly that and is becoming the bastion shining example, quote unquote, of this thing. And it's a really shitty example of it.
It is. It's a shame. Like, it's a real big shame. I think for me, right, the thing that could make it work, and I do honestly believe it's fixable, but they would need to change the ending.
Yeah.
Right. And this is, like, a big, big bugbear of mine. Anytime you do any sort of writing where you want to make your kind of anti-hero or flawed hero, inverted commas, where they need to get some sort of comeuppance.
Right.
they need to.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're okaying it.
Right. And, like, I can see stories, there are stories where the bad guy doesn't get his comeuppance, and often that's the point of this story.
Right, absolutely. And it's not, he is the bad guy.
Right.
And that is the story, is that he is the bad guy and the bad guy wins. And you feel that.
Right.
Whereas Evan is not a bad guy.
Right. He's the good guy. He's on the poster. His name's in the show.
He's the hero, right. You know? He does really, really bad things and is excused.
Mm-hmm.
Completely exonerated. And that isn't right. That just isn't right. It's not the way the world should work.
Right.
And it's not the way the world works for the most part,
right.
Unless, you know, you're a white cis male.
Right.
But
exactly.
That isn't what the show's getting at. We're not going to break down into that. But I just think there's so much, like I say, there's so much in it that is good and interesting. Like the concept of, you know, what good can come from bad.
Right.
Like this idea of like, what is the truth? What's the point of the truth?
Yeah.
Why don't you, live a lie? Like,
right.
Why do we go to these things?
Right.
These are all really complex.
Yeah.
Big discussions that exist in this story.
Right.
And would still exist, and you would be left questioning.
Yeah.
If at the end it wasn't a happy ending.
Right. And I do think, because I've seen some of this discourse too about like people who will say, well, that's the point, right? You're supposed to be conflicted about how you feel about Evan. And like, you're supposed to see like he's a good person, but he does these shitty things and doesn't get his comeuppance. And that's supposed mm-hmm. to leave you in this conflicted state.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I hear you. And do you know who I'm conflicted about? Sweeney fucking Todd. Like,
right.
And
a
musical can make me feel that and make me understand that, right?
Absolutely.
And can make me be all about him at the end of Act One and really, really scared of him at the end of Act Two, right? Like,
assassins.
You can actually do that in a musical. If anything, Dear Evan Hansen maybe does it by accident, but it is, I would argue, not intentional.
No, I just don't think it does. I don't, like, your stomach slowly turns, right?
Right.
All the way through. But there's enough light shining on him
mm-hmm.
that you're asking the question of, rather than asking, how is Evan going to make amends for this?
Right.
You're asking the question, oh God, how is he going to get out of this one?
Right. Like,
and that isn't the question you should be asking.
In our world of fixing musicals, like, I think, to your point, the last scene should be perhaps Evan at the orchard. He gets a text from Zoe that says, sorry, can't make it. And like maybe his mom shows up and they have, you know, a little interaction. And it's still his first time at the orchard.
Yeah.
And that still leaves us on perhaps a hopeful note. But he doesn't get unilaterally forgiven. He there's still some consequence to your actions.
Exactly. Like, and the thing, so one of the things that actually really frustrates me is the final line, where he's like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, I'm here, you're yourself, no hiding, no lying.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true.
Right.
Everyone still believes this lie.
Right.
Literally every single other person apart from the Murphys and his mum believes that he was the best friend of Connor and they raised all this money to do this thing. And within that is a really interesting argument because we wouldn't have the orchard if Evan didn't do this.
Right.
And the Murphys wouldn't have had a moment of consolation.
Right.
He wouldn't be as close to his mum. You know what I mean? Like, these positive things came out of this bad.
Right.
But he gets to sail through it.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be the case. Like, there needs to be... because otherwise... Well, let's just do that.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Well, and it does. The show is trying to be an indictment of technology, right? And it's the set design tries to do this by, like, you don't see all of the sky until we finally get to the orchard. And that's, it's in the music, right? All we see is sky. There's this nature imagery of falling out of a tree. And then we, you know, come full circle to the trees and, like, people being in person versus people being online and the conversations Evan has either over the computer or in person. Yeah. Like, it's trying to be like, you know, the distance between us is the problem with us. But it's just a story about humans. Like, it doesn't go deep enough into what the show intends to be the problems with technology. Mm-hmm. Like, it tries to hint at it when, you know, the Murphys start getting hate calls after the suicide note gets published, and like some of this other stuff, and then tries to have this actual connection when Zoe is in person with Evan at the end. But it's not about that, and they thought it was. Yeah. Like, they wrote a show that wasn't about what they thought it was about, and in the process missed a bunch of, like, really obvious fucking flaws and, like, terrible messages that they're sending alongside of it.
I think, like, Zoe is a really crucial character here to discuss because, you know, I go to town on I can't remember a character's name, Christine from Be More Chill, and how that's one of the worst written characters. Yeah,
the manic pixie dream girl trope.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Zoe isn't a million miles away.
No, she's pretty
close. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, she has no agency over her own life.
Right.
And I find that really upsetting.
I mean, her...
Like, you know what I mean?
Her perhaps most involved song is Requiem, maybe?
In Requiem. But so, like, in Requiem... It's a song where she's been fully gaslighted into being so confused. She doesn't know what to believe.
Right.
And obviously had this horrible, horrible experience with this brother who was mentally abusive to her.
Right.
And is now being told that he was a good guy and deserves forgiveness. And now she's struggling with that. Again, that is a fascinating theme.
Right.
That is a fascinating, because there is elements of, like, well, it's kind of better to think the other way, isn't it?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But did he deserve that?
Right.
And
it's all founded on this, like, one note portrayal of Connor, which is already problematic. Like,
absolutely. And then at the end, she thanks him.
Yeah.
Because he helped them cope with their grief.
Right.
Oh. But he. Like, it's not real.
It's not real. I mean? It's not real. He was a manipulative, lying piece of shit. And you justified it away with an unspecified, you know, mental health issue. Like, what are you trying to say? What is the moral of this show? What am I to take out of this? You will be found. Evan's not found. You don't give me any...
Connor's not found.
You don't give me any... any ground to stand on how I will be found. And it's been really interesting to see post this show. The show has sponsored a lot of, like, very legitimate TED Talk style discussions of mental health and things, which is great. And I think that's awesome. And it's money from art being put to good use. And that is great. And I would never want to diminish that. Your show doesn't do a good job of it.
I really don't think so. I mean, like that is it. Like, the only way that family could get over Connor's death by suicide was to believe a lie about how he was hurting.
Right.
Rather than trying to process the truth about how much pain he was actually in.
And they like, hand wave away in, like, a scene maybe how shitty of a family they were to him. And then everything else just seems... like, such a ridiculous caricature of a depressed kid.
Exactly.
That either this family is awful, is just terrible.
Yeah.
Or we've missed the plot here.
Yep.
Right? Because they wouldn't be as white picket fence on the outside if they were so evil on the inside. Like, none of it's congruent in a way that it becomes... difficult, you know, there is no verisimilitude there.
Mm-hmm.
Drives me nuts.
Yep. It's just so tricky. And, like, it's one of those, as we're discussing all this, I'm hearing all the people switching off because they love this show so much. And, like, it's the classic thing with this podcast. Like, there are these moments of challenge and different mm-hmm. difference of opinion. And you know, I mean, if you are one of the people who loves the show and relates so much to Evan, that's fantastic. Yeah. And take away from any piece of art
yep.
what you need to.
It is. I wonder if this is a broader discussion too, and you know, maybe there's music to play in a transition somewhere in here. But mm-hmm. I am running into this more and more, and I don't have a good answer. Because the world is facing a reckoning in 1,000 different ways these days.
Right.
We've talked about this before, liking problematic things. But yeah. now that more and more things are becoming more detailedly problematic, how do you like anything?
Right, absolutely.
And I think, like, I tweeted a joke tweet about it, which was reductive, and I kind of regret a little bit, but about Hairspray the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it came on my background musical theater playlist, and like I really love the music from Hairspray tells a really problematic explanation of, you know, the plight of black and brown people in Baltimore in the 60s, mm-hmm. and I still really like the music, and
absolutely
it's difficult for me to circle that square.
Yeah, well, I think I mean, not to start another episode about Hairspray right now, but I think compared to, in a comparison to Dear Evan Hansen, mm-hmm. I think Hairspray does tell a different story.
But it still tells a problematic white savior story that is the wrong kind of history that leaves the audience with incorrect opinions.
Absolutely. But I'm thinking of the original John Waters film.
Sure. Okay.
And how that was for an audience that wouldn't get these stories.
Right.
Right. Whereas that opportunity was presented,
giving a justification for Dear Evan Hansen is like, even bad representation absolutely. is representation.
Because, hey, we've already spoken about this for about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we're two people who have firsthand experience of this
right.
kind of thing.
Exactly.
I think that is it. Is like, you know, we're not going to spend an hour and a half just shitting all over this show because that isn't fun and that's not what we're really about, Tommy, is it?
Really about
Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, I thought it was Company.
There are nuggets of gold within this,
yeah.
and hopefully we will dredge them all out, because I think we're getting quite good at being a bit more objective.
I hope so. I don't know.
Or at least between the two of us.
I think it's a goal we're setting for ourselves.
Absolutely. It is an important goal.
Yeah.
And I think in the same way that even if you do really love this show,
yeah.
Don't throw hate at the people who don't like it.
I think I honestly believe whatever skill we're like outwardly trying to cultivate here is going to become so increasingly important in our post-COVID arts world is like having a good set of like civil discourse tools to uh-huh. talk about the problems with a piece of art while still appreciating its good parts and
yes.
not associate, like, being able to draw a line between the art and the creators and the art and the fandom. Yep. And I still struggle yep. with it. I'm sure I have made some poor comments about it even in the past 20 minutes mm-hmm. that wouldn't be good examples of this. But it's going to be an important goal as we talk about,
absolutely.
You know, our recycling art form that likes performing things from the past and creating new things and, you know.
Exactly. But I think another key point of that as well is listening to people who have different opinions
sure.
to you. And I think testament from the frogs.
Yeah.
I think we're very good at that.
Yeah. And I want to acknowledge it's hard to do. It is hard.
It's so hard to do.
It is hard to listen and hear opinions that differ from yours.
Full stop, let alone process.
Right. Yep.
It's hard just to come in the lugs.
Yep.
Do you have that, lugs?
No, that's a new one for me. Ears?
Ears.
Like yeah. like lug nuts?
No, I think just lugs.
Just lugs. Huh, I wonder what the origin is.
It's Scottish.
All right, should we say some good things?
Yes!
Or try at least.
Sing no requiem. tonight.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
This musical is the best. Oh my God. I love it so much. So I love that. Should we talk about some good things? The first thing you've written here is sloppy plot.
Sloppy plot. I do. Okay.
Let's wait. Before we talk about it, let's talk about some positive things.
I love Heidi. I love Evan's mom.
Yes.
Best character in the show.
Hands down. Absolutely. And I think in both performance by OBC Rachel B. Jones.
Obviously.
And actually in the way that it's written.
In the way that it's written.
I think she's a fantastic female character.
Starts the show. I mean, we kind of start with Evan, but... Really, does anybody have a map?
She sings first.
The more time with Heidi than anyone else at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And between Good For You and So Big, So Small,
So Big, So Small, goodness sake. Again, to give this show its credit, we've talked about this before. We had a long discussion about it in Mamma Mia. Mm-hmm. I love mum songs. And that is a fantastic mother-child song, particularly from the extremely musically theater underrepresented single mother.
Yes.
Hello.
Right.
Fantastic piece.
Yeah. No, her and even the whole some of the street scenes, the scene she has with the Murphys, gut-wrenching. Some of them in some justifications the climax of the show. I want more of that. But
yeah, absolutely.
But also I wonder if that's the problem, right? If I got more of it, maybe I'd be sick of it.
Right. Or maybe it just wouldn't make sense because it's not the point.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not the point. But I think, she is really written extremely well.
Yeah.
And also from all angles of that idea of not understanding her son.
Yeah.
A, because he's not letting her understand him.
Yeah.
And B, because he's tricky to understand.
I think the musical theater writing lesson to take from her character being so successful is characters should have reasons to be the way they are and should respond to their environment in believable ways, which seems a simple piece of advice, but you can count 7 people in the show who don't do that. And absolutely. It's why she shines so brightly as such a great character. Yeah.
She is one of the only ones who really goes what the hell is going on?
Right.
It's this is nonsense.
Right. You get a little from Alana later. But she's painted as such a caricature at the beginning.
Well, exactly.
Which is frustrating.
There's zero depth.
Right. Exactly.
There's zero depth there. But no, I completely am with you. It's Heidi's really good. And what I will say, for the most part, right, the direction from Michael Greif given to Evan is really good.
Yes.
So notice what I'm really trying to skirt around.
Right,
the point.
Yep.
From the material he was given.
Yes.
He has created.
Yes.
An fascinating character.
I will say, for the show's comparison to Next to Normal, this show is more entertaining to watch than Next to Normal. And lives with a lot of very similar conceits, right? Just to keep a couple people, relatively empty stage. We're not dropping a chandelier. We're not doing big, big things here. But this show is does a lot of nice, subtle things that lets you follow a lot of really abstract thought. Like even as much as we, you know, spent 40 minutes shitting on it. But the way that the specter of Connor Murphy is used throughout the thing is very effectively and simply done. And like, you know, having a ghost character, I think this is an underappreciated theatrical device. Like,
yeah,
we know he's dead. We know he's coming back in some capacity. How the fact that so simply we realize that the things that Connor Murphy is saying in the Dear Evan Hansen song are coming out of either Jared or Evan's mouth, and that our brain can bounce back and forth between knowing who is acting as the puppeteer for him in that moment, like so seamlessly that you don't even notice it as a conceit. Like a lot of the construction of this, very, very clever.
I think, I do agree with you. I don't want to start back.
I know it's hard again, because I don't like the content of it, but I like how it works.
But like, so obviously there's a really strong comparison that can be made between Connor and Gabe from Next to Normal.
Sure.
Because they're the same.
They're the same. Yeah.
But where I think Gabe works substantially more than Connor is that Gabe has never existed.
Right.
As 16-year-old Aaron Tveit,
only a construct.
He was a baby,
right?
Yeah, that we never saw. Whereas we saw the real-life human Connor, and then we see this caricature,
right?
Like create a character, and then this kind of representation of the dark side of Evan's
brain. We really see like three or four Connors throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that could be more pick a lane,
right? Just use him as one thing.
Yeah. Because otherwise, there's no character there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because whereas, like, Gabe is very much a character because he is playing.
Right.
He is playing Diane's brain, basically.
Yeah.
And the conversations that she's having with herself.
I think second to improving the ending scene, the, like, my next revision note would be work on Connor. Like, we need to see more of him at the beginning and more dimensionality. He's a clever kid. Like, we get that. The whole, like, I don't want you going to school high, Connor. Great, then I won't go. Like, that's a clever... It's played as a joke, but he's a smart he's a smart kid. He's not stupid. And this is a plot hole that people don't notice enough. He goes to school. Like... It's never mentioned, but like the whole, our whole introduction is Connor saying like, I don't want to go to school. Guess what happens? He goes to school. The plot doesn't happen unless Connor goes to school and has that interaction with Evan. And like, that's a moment to capitalize on, right? He just is trying to be shitty to his mom. He's not ditching school. And so like, that's another thing, you know, give us a little more hint of his relationship with his sister. Other than just like, I saw my brother push you, he's a psycho. You know, like, give us a little more there so then we have something to relate to when we start seeing Figment Connor.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And then we can compare it to, is it real Connor or Evan's imagining of Connor, blah, 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 blah.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a bit about the book later.
The book.
The novel.
The book.
The novel.
God.
Reading. Yes, but we will talk about that later. I think let's talk about the songs.
Sure. Can we talk about Waving Through the Window? Because this time through, what is your interpretation of this song? Because it is like a deeply steeped in metaphor song, right?
Yeah, so it's tricky because before I'd even heard the song, I was told it was about, it's actually about being on your phone and the black screen.
So that's the interesting thing. It wasn't until this time through, literally yesterday, when he said tap tap tapping on the glass, and I was like, a phone, Jesus, like I had envisioned the metaphor of like he's trapped inside himself and can't communicate out of this metaphorical glass pane that he sees in front of him, and it wasn't,
which is also legit,
and it wasn't until 24 hours ago I was like, we're also talking about like I wave it, like literally we're waving at each other through a window. That metaphor, it did not strike me until 24 hours ago.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Well, that's like, I was told that that's what it was about before I'd even heard the song.
Sure.
So, that's always what I thought about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really great song.
Yeah.
I think it's an incredible song, actually. And it sets up, like, it, as an I Want song, yeah. which in theory
it, which it, is, it is, basically. Yeah.
But it also sets up that theme of technology dependence yeah. and integration into your life and how, mm-hmm. you know, this is your life now.
Right.
It does that really, really well in not a forced way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like I pick up my iPhone and I,
right.
you know, log in with my fingerprint ID.
Right, exactly. Like it is. No... Well, and it jumps back and forth between, because it starts with like a car metaphor, right? I've learned to slam on the brake. It's this, the more I listen to Pasek and Paul, the more I notice they kind of do this, is they like have a lot of, I don't know, throwaway metaphors, mm-hmm. where like the metaphor never really comes back, which is interesting to me because sometimes they have very specific metaphors, right? When you've fallen in the forest and there's nobody around, and I know they've attributed this lyric to their book writer and not themselves, but it's
right, okay.
it's a good turn, right? Evan literally fell out of a tree and we're calling upon this idiom of if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody, like it's a real good lyric, but I've learned to slam on the brake before I even turn the key. Evan never mm-hmm. drives in this show, right? Like we never, yeah. you know, like this could, it's a weird intro. And it's why Tap, Tap, Tap It on the Glass, I think, has never really hit me before, because they do bounce back and forth between these throwaway metaphors and idioms and these really specific metaphors and idioms.
Because I think like Tap, Tap, Tapping on the Glass fits in well with Step Out of the Sun.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like it feels like I'm containing myself. I'm going away. I'm leaving the real world and hiding behind something.
Right.
But yeah, I'd never really actually thought about the car. That is random,
yeah.
isn't it?
And even like we start with stars in our eyes, we start believing that we belong, but every sun doesn't rise and no one tells you where you went wrong. Is poetry, right?
Yeah.
Gorgeous. And what, like, is this Evan's existential yearning for youth, right?
Yeah.
As a child, we hope for all things, but not all things happen and no one tells you why. Like, that's a theme we never really quite explore.
No, not so. Well, he doesn't have that self-awareness.
Right.
Stop.
Well, and that's so. This is a secondary point I have about this thing that is a bother, and I pardon me for bringing this up. But Evan is very articulate when he is singing.
Yes.
And is very not articulate when he is not singing.
Mm-hmm.
And if, in a very, like, Hunchback of Notre Dame sort of way.
Right.
There was a more specific line drawn there. Like, Evan is waving through a window, like, I start to speak and nobody can hear, but this is, you know, what is it? Like, Still Rivers Run Deep. Like, here is what is actually happening in my brain. That'd be a really cool thing. Except sometimes he's with Zoe and he has a whole stuttering book scene that then turns into a very articulate lie about how Connor was actually a great guy, right?
Yeah.
And the stuttering goes away and the inability to speak goes away. Yes. And you can see Ben Platt kind of struggle with this transition because he does kind of have two modes for Evan. He has the like mm-hmm. fingertip clutchy hand gesticulating sort of Evan. And then he has the singing articulate musical theater Evan. And in whatever that song is, he said, the one with Zoe.
Oh, yeah.
He said,
is it not like go on or something like that?
It'll be halfway through.
Forever.
No. See,
gone,
this is
on forever.
This is the other problem with Pasek and Paul songs, but we don't need to get into it.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly.
But like,
Good For You?
Nope. That's Heidi.
Only Us? Only Us.
Is that it?
If I could tell her.
If I could tell her. That's the one.
Great.
Thank you for that.
Good thing I knew.
Like, they don't, it's the same gripe I have with like your magic should have rules, right? Your, mm-hmm. your, how a person speaks in the book scene should match how they sing in the lyric scenes.
Yeah.
Or
your neurodiversity should have rules.
Right. Your neurodiversity should have rules. It's the, it's the same sort of thing.
It magically goes away at times.
Right. And,
again, that's another argument as to why it's not a good representation of it.
Exactly.
Because sadly that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I think it's a really, really solid song. One, I don't think needs to be there. And I think this might be a controversial opinion because mm-hmm. I've not heard anyone say this. I don't think Words Fail should be a song.
Remind me when that happens. Perhaps this is a sign.
Words Fail is his final song. Mm. It's the he gets found out and he is like, I don't know how to comprehend this.
Your reaction to it absolutely is your reaction to him not getting his comeuppance, right?
Well, yeah, I just think it's a hero moment.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's him having his realization light bulb moment. But actually, he doesn't because he's just like, I don't know what to say. There's nothing I can say
right
to make this better. I want to step out into the sun right. and feel better.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that it detracts completely from the Murphys to have any sort of reaction.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they just kind of leave.
Right. And the implication is that they never really out him at the end, right?
Well, they don't. They actively don't. Because I can't remember what the reason was, but it wasn't a good one.
Right.
It wasn't one that I think makes any sense. And right, this isn't the moment to make this point, but with the comeuppance, I'm not saying he should be like put in prison
right.
or da da da. He just needs to be accountable for his actions, which he is not. He admits them. Yes, that is not the same.
Right. Like
that is because he doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think he feels remorse.
I mean, the song ends with him asking, how do I step into the sun? And it would be great if the musical ended with him stepping into the sun, right? And
right.
embracing whoever his true self is, which apparently we haven't seen throughout the whole thing.
Exactly. So this is the point where I want to bring up Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, there is no better portrayal of comeuppance uh-huh. than in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and it just so happens that it's along a very similar plot point of neurodiversity and the actions that we sometimes take when we are experiencing very low moments.
Sure.
And it is fantastic because Rachel Bloom, her character Rebecca, she does some really, I won't spoil, really, really bad things, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Extremely bad. Kind of gets away with them mm-hmm. initially mm-hmm. because of her mental illness.
Okay.
And kind of uses it.
Yeah.
That doesn't work mm-hmm. because she's excused. So she repeats.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. because there's no, she doesn't have a moment.
Yeah.
What happens on the other side of that is she makes an admission
right.
to her friends about all the lies that she spun, and they reject her and they say, you're a horrible person.
Yeah.
You should never have done that.
Right.
That is the biggest betrayal. And eventually, over time, they work through it.
Yeah.
But she doesn't win. Like, she still loses a lot
yeah.
from that. Whereas Evan ends up more popular than he's ever been before.
I mean, he goes through Words Fail, which is perhaps it's like an 11 o'clock kind of contemplation about like,
yes.
it's, you know, who am I, Jean Valjean, right?
Yes.
Then we cut to Heidi singing basic, like a beautiful song and basically a like forgiveness song for like, I'm sorry you're fucked up, it's because your dad left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we fast forward a year and Evan is working at the Pottery Barn and we're at the Orchard for the first time. Like,
yep.
He hasn't gotten what he wanted. He also hasn't stepped into the sun.
The thing is, he has gotten what he wanted.
Mm, fair.
He didn't want to be lonely.
Yeah.
And now he is a hero in a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah.
Because of what he did for Connor.
Yeah. And because Zoe says thank you, right?
And Zoe says thank you. And who knows where their relationship will lead after that.
Right.
It isn't like, thank you, I can never see you again
right.
because what you did was just too
right,
much.
Which would be an amazing thing for her to say at the end of the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What agency?
But,
but
instead she says, I really wanted you to see this orchard. I thought you never might, basically, right?
Yeah.
Like, I want you
like,
to see
what you've
done.
Why does she care about what he thinks?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, she shouldn't.
I mean, so, like, make it an ending scene with Evan and Alana, and like Evan is, you know, digging in the orchard, and like he's the maintenance person, and this is his comeuppance for like making it up to her for having deceived her the whole time. Like, there's so many other options.
Something, yeah, absolutely, absolutely, and it just,
yeah,
it's not there. Anyway, we've already made that point. We can't make the same point again. Shall we talk a little bit about the book?
Yeah. They made a novel of this musical, Jimmy.
I know. This hasn't happened much, has it?
I was racking my brain about, like, has this... Because, like, I know there are, like, novelizations of, like, Disney movies, right?
Right. Yeah.
I think there are novelizations that happen in other contexts. But to do a novelization of a musical in that direction, especially...
In that, yeah, exactly.
And, like, where the book didn't exist before...
Exactly. That's because the thing is like there are so few original musicals,
right,
that then creating a novel from that would be really. And I'm like, I can't think of any.
It's just a strange zag, you know.
Did you just say zag?
Yeah, like to zig and zag.
Okay, I'll give you that. Let me look at my wall. No,
I don't think it's happened. And, like, it has a new author on top of everyone else. Val Emick. Emich, perhaps?
Emich, I would have said, yeah, Emich.
And
he's an actor and a musician. So he's a very good person to write this.
Like, I wonder,
you know what I mean?
I wonder who, because we find ourselves increasingly more in these worlds now. Who was the first person who was like, book, right?
Yes.
And like, was it Val who was like, ooh, this would make a great book? Or was it the producers who was like, aha, capitalization? You know.
Well, I mean, a lot of the discourse around the creation of the novel was because they were like, only so many people can see this show.
And
but there's a huge fan base.
I'm all about that for a while. You remember the It Gets Better project?
Absolutely. Got a t-shirt.
Dan Savage adapted a lot of those stories into a book and very explicitly was like, listen, these stories don't read well in a book. Like, this is not the way that these things should exist. But a book can go in a school library where a kid can find it. And like, this is a way into this for the right kind of kid. And I think the Dear Evan Hansen novelization is the right way into this for the right kind of person. Who
definitely,
you know, if they're reading a book, that's less of a, like, it's just an easier way in. Like, I'm all about it from that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, so they do interesting things with it.
Yes.
It isn't the script on the stage, you know what I mean?
It's not like a libretto.
Absolutely not. There are new plot points. There are new characters. Mm-hmm. There are new, narrators, like, because it is all first person present as well, which I love. That's so rare. First person present from Evan's perspective, except for, and this is where I think I like it, except for the occasional dip in from Connor.
Yes. And so the spoilers in the next 30 seconds if you're planning on reading the book.
Yes.
They make Connor gay.
Yes.
Canonically.
Yes, absolutely. And not only that, they make Connor a much less broad strokes angry boy.
Right.
He is a lot more sympathetic in the book. And you find out about a relationship that he had. Mm-hmm. And that actually a lot of his pain and his anger has come from this rejection. Mm-hmm. From a guy. So I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
About this. Number one, I like the fact that we get more Connor.
Right.
Because that makes it, I said it earlier, yeah. The two are lampshaded together, mm-hmm. as these people who are going through similar,
right.
but very different experiences.
Exactly.
And I like that they are the only two mm-hmm. narrators mm-hmm. of the book.
Yeah.
I like that. That there is a queer character in this story
is a nice thing.
It's a nice thing.
Yes.
Would it be lovely if it was on the stage? But hey, it's fine.
Right. Well, yeah.
It's fine. It's 2016.
Yeah.
You know, far too early for that kind of thinking. And then the kind of final point is, it's not enough mm-hmm. of a tip of the cap.
Right.
To teenage LGBT suicide.
Sure.
Which is an epidemic.
Absolutely. And like is worth acknowledging. I mean the way I described it to my boyfriend earlier is they Dumbledored him. Like I don't disagree. Yes, and
yes, uh-huh, yeah.
We're, like, diving straight into the bury your gays trope.
Right.
And, like, of course the trauma he has to have is that he's gay, which is such a terrible, terrible stereotype and trope of the world. Like, of course the one gay character has to be the one who dies, like, mm-hmm.
I know.
It just...
But it's not doing it in a, like, it, you know, they don't... I've not read the book. Disclaimer. That is a very important, and that is an important disclaimer.
Important, yeah.
I am speaking from a position of ignorance. So, but as far as I'm aware, they do not start the Connor Project as awareness of gay
of
teen
like
suicide.
Queer suicide or something. It is just an awareness of suicide. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And that is where I'm like, you could have turned that cog differently.
Right.
Also, the way he starts the Connor Project is different in the book. He's watching a documentary where they basically do that and he gets inspired to do it and via that, which I just thought interesting.
It's interesting.
Interesting to point. So, yeah. Good and bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
good and bad.
It is fascinating. I mean, I don't know if this is the right transition, but it does speak to a different way that contemporary musical theater fans are engaging with the media. Like, I could see, it hasn't happened, but I could see a novelization of Newsies or Spring Awakening. I could see a big Broadway machine doing this for something like that. No one would ever consider or has ever thought about novelizing Hello, Dolly.
Right.
Or, like, maybe, you know, perhaps I will take that back. There are some novelizations of West Side Story.
How are there? It's called Romeo and Juliet.
I have a vague memory of a comparative reading, and it was both together. And, like, the left-hand page was West Side Story, and the right-hand page was Romeo and Juliet. And, like, that was the point.
Okay.
And perhaps that's an invented memory. But, like, this kind of, like, young adult novelization adaptation wouldn't have happened 15 years ago, wouldn't have happened 20 years ago. And I think is a, you know, a sign of the times and in a really fascinating way.
Yeah. I hope it's not pandering.
I worry that it is, you know?
I know. But I'm an optimist, Tom.
Sure.
And I've never called you Tom in my life.
I know, that's a fun one.
I won't be doing that again. I hated that. I'm an optimist, T, and I really hope that they're not.
Yeah,
because it's it doesn't feel right. Okay, to bring back the Be More Chill comparison, right? It doesn't feel shoehorned in,
right,
like George Salazar's apparent bisexuality, right, that's never discussed in the show,
right,
but it's cool. We'll talk about it on Tumblr.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't feel, it feels like actually that could make a lot of sense.
Right. Yeah. Like they made some important story choices that make sense, that are explained, that, you know,
right,
which they wouldn't have needed, right, to do if the goal was just like, if we put Dear Evan Hansen on the front of a package of paper, people will give us $7 for it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So that's my hope.
I like that. It must be fun being an optimist.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to make a cockeyed optimist joke, but it didn't work. I was like, oh, that's what they call me. Oh, and I used to be cockeyed.
Hey!
Oh my God.
That's a missed opportunity. I was a cockeyed optimist.
I'll get writing the YouTube parody song now. Do people still do YouTube parody songs?
Oh yeah,
Randy Rainbow. Well, of course they do.
Never mention his name again on this podcast. How dare you?
I'll bleep it out.
Please. No, I've never, that of all the like hot takes I have on Twitter, the ones that receive the most immediate backlash are when I...
Oh, really?
When I put down Randy Rabo. He's a...
Because you say a lot of things.
I know, I do. He's a dick.
Fair.
He's a racist dick. Go. He's an unapologetic racist dick.
There's that hot take, ladies and gents. Should we talk about fans?
Yeah, here we go.
It was a February day when your dad came by before going away. A U-Haul truck in the driveway. The day it was suddenly real. I told you not to come outside, but you saw that truck and you smiled so wide. A real live truck in your driveway. We let you sit behind the wheel. Goodbye, goodbye. Now it's just me and my little guy. And the house felt so big, and I felt so small. The house felt so big.
I read an academic paper about the fandom of Dear Evan Hansen.
I mean, there's a lot. Yeah.
Like, people have studied
it's really cool.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's, so this is, I mean, we talk about this actually a fair amount, but we do like reading academic papers,
yeah,
on musical theater shows, and there's really not enough
of this one. So, if we remember to put this one in the notes, Tap, Tap, Tap It on the Glass, Generation Z Social Media and Dear Evan Hansen by Bethany Doherty,
right,
published 2020.
Right. It's great. And all I just want to do is implore all of our academic listeners out there,
yeah,
to get some of this shit published, because there's some good stuff.
Like,
take the seeds, like the shitty seeds of ideas that we've brought in this podcast and turn them into
papers, as many have done before you. And shout outs to everyone who's ever asked us to be cited in an academic paper.
Yeah, exactly.
We love you. But I do agree it's so important, because this, you know... I saw it was interesting. This academic paper actually cited a different one that I was interested in reading. I'm not going to be able to find the citation. Oh, here it is. Carlson 2003, who wrote a paper or wrote an article in the Theater Journal, but said theater as an art that lives by and survives largely in memory. And that was a really interesting thought that I hadn't really thought about before. But that, like, our primary interface with theater as an art form is not while it's happening, but is before it, after it, and around it. And that the concept of a show exists mostly in how people talk about it and how they remember it, and not in how it actually happened.
Yes.
And that was a really interesting distinction that I'd never really been able to, like, put such a fine point on. But so then this article goes on to talk about how, like, Dear Evan Hansen, I think, is in marketing and fandom and kind of its acceptance, the first fully formed existence of a particular flavor of musical that we've been dancing around the idea of for maybe 20 years. Like, it is the obvious end result of the Broadway.com generation and the Tumblr fandoms, and like, finally people who live in publicity offices have started to realize that there is something to leverage here, and the result is the marketing and the world around Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah, and you're right, it's 20 years exactly, because it began with Rent.
Right.
I think. I would
thereabouts. I mean, every backstage vlog that has ever existed, the Lightning Thief Twitter account, like all of these things lead up to finally a place that's like, hey, one of the main points of this article is like, you know, death to critics. This is how people interface with shows now, right?
Yes.
And of course it would be Dear Evan Hansen, a show predicated on virality and internet association and, you know, retweet this video. And like, of course, like, it took a show about the thing to do the thing in real life, which is also a little dirty feeling in the back, which is interesting. Because, like, the internet's not portrayed as the good guy in this show. And it is interesting that the marketing office was like, ah, the internet, that's what will sell our show. It's like, selling your show, and then when you get to the theater, calling your audience villains in a way that, like, I don't think anyone quite put together.
Yeah, it didn't work for Anyone Can Whistle.
Right, exactly. It's like that in the 21st century.
Yeah, it is an important piece. Mm-hmm. In regards to that, because I think obviously we can draw a lot of parallels with Hamilton,
sure,
because they're contemporaries of each other. But I think Hamilton is a different kettle of fish because it's doing very different things. Like, Dear Evan Hansen doesn't feel like it's aimed at grown-ups.
Yeah, they have different target audiences.
Right. Like, in the same way that Be More Chill and Lightning Thief are not aimed at grown-ups.
Exactly.
And potentially, and actually this is a really good point. One of the reasons why we don't like it is maybe because we're grown-ups.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? And it's not for us.
Right.
And in which case, yaldi, go for it.
Exactly. Throw our hands up. Not my jam. We've done that before, right? I don't get this because it's not for me. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just like, we're not teenagers in high school. We don't know what it's like.
Right.
You have a very good perspective, but you can only walk so far in the shoes of these kids. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that, and there's no denying that this show has had just an explosive and very, like, in a different way to Be More Chill. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in a very different way to Be More Chill, Heather's, Lightning Thief, like all of our recent bursts.
Do you know what has happened? Let me throw this at you. Dear Evan Hansen prototyped the new Broadway marketing machine and was able to do so because it was a show that catered itself to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Beetlejuice said, "Hold my beer," and was a show that need not necessarily be about that, but found a way into that same marketing world and did it exactly right, without the same hooks that come from the content.
Mm-hmm.
And were it not for the pandemic, I think this would have been the future for the next 10 years
of a
steady stream of this sort of thing.
Yeah. And it would be grating.
It really would.
I think we're going to get it anyway.
And we're going to see it shoehorned into musicals that don't deserve it, right? Like,
right.
How long, and I mean, current Rudin controversies aside, how long before the Music Man TikTok starts, right? You know, let's do the Rock Island Challenge.
Yeah, exactly. You know that Sutton Foster and Hugh Jackman are going to be backstage on TikTok.
Yeah, because
they need to be.
Because they were told to be, right? And because this thing's going to need an even bigger marketing boost than they thought if it survives even the next couple months.
If it survives, that's exactly it. Yeah, you're totally right. I just think, it's it's quite impressive because I've shot down TikTok marketing a lot in the past on this show. But weirdly, there's something about Dear Evan Hansen's fandom that doesn't make me feel as ill.
I
don't know what that is.
Because I think this is a bit of a side tangent, but does relate. Because we're people who live on the internet. We have this conversation off pod all the time about how people don't do a really good job of separating the platform from the fans. Like, TikTok is a good place right now to market because of the people who are on it. But the people who are on it, like they do all the time, are going to jump to another platform, you know, circa 2-5 years. And then you got to follow them and learn what's up with that new platform. And it might be something quite like TikTok or something entirely different. And you have to adapt with that. And you will not be able to predict it. And it's not about, you got to have your Instagram and your Facebook and your Twitter and your LinkedIn presence and your paper presence and your poster presence and your television ad presence and your talk show presence, right? It's not about saturating the field. It's about chasing that golden goose. And that's why Beetlejuice was able to do it, right? Whereas, like, a lot, you know, the old school marketing will be like, they're going to be huge billboards about the Music Man, and Sutton Foster's going on her Scott Rudin isn't shit tour right now. But she's going to do it on, like, Dateline or Good Morning America or something. She's not going to do it on TikTok. You know, it's a really good example, the current Rudin controversy and how the old school stars have responded to it. Like, Too Late and Too Little, Hugh Jackman's all caps screenshotted Word document response distributed through his agent to be posted as an image macro on Twitter, right? Does not have the same impact as two camera person in Instagram stories telling their story of abuse. And like,
exactly,
the marketing folk, the agents of the world, aren't paying enough attention to the subtleties of platform and messaging. And we owe some of that differentiation to how Dear Evan Hansen was kind of able to, like, ride on, you know, find that zeitgeist kite and take off with it.
Yeah. Oh my god. Weird coincidence. Ben Platt's Side by Side by Susan Blackwell about Dear Evan Hansen was them flying kites.
It's all a master plan. My brain works in mysterious ways.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
It's also a really good app. Right. I think to round off, would you agree? That this is an important piece of theater.
I would. It's not going to ever be revived once it closes.
Yeah, I'd be very... Well, I feel that way about a lot of contemporary stuff. But yes, I agree. But I think it's, like, very significant. I've not encountered a show that's this divisive in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I mean, for as much as we talked, you know, on end at the beginning about it, like... It did make me cry. Like, it was, you know, it's doing things that is manipulating my emotions, which all theater does, you know, for good or for bad. That's the point of art, right? Yeah. But it also, in the way that Next to Normal tried and did so in a less successful and lauded way, has changed what is our art form.
Yeah. And, like, I do not doubt for a single second that a lot more people have an awareness about the struggles of mental health now because of Dear Evan Hansen.
As much as I, you know, outright shat on the show at the beginning.
Yeah.
If, and I'm sure it has, you know, some mom taking her kid to come see a show on Broadway, right, was able to leave the theater once and mom was able to be like, hey, you okay? And have an honest conversation about something. That is a thing I am pleased is in the world in a really big way.
Absolutely.
So I agree. The, you know, spurring the conversation sometimes is worth it, even if it's messy.
Totally. So that's it. let's have a conversation about it.
Mm-hmm. Dear Evan Hansen, Tommy's favorite musical.
Well, Tommy, not Tom, that was Dear Evan Hansen.
Dear Jimmy, this is going to be a great episode, and here's why.
Oh, that's cute.
We should have started with that. I just thought about it right now. It's a shame I didn't think about it at the beginning.
Oh, well.
Just, I won't make you edit it. Everyone, just pretend I said that at the beginning, and look at how clever I am.
Yeah, exactly. Just drink your memory. Hey, Tommy, do you have a quiz question?
I don't, Jimmy, because we're old men now. We just turned 99. Can you believe it at all?
I actually can't. Because it should be like 360.
I know, right? It should be much more.
But no, I'm proud of us.
And now is not the time to get too sentimental, because we should do that on our 100th episode.
I'll hold back the tears. When is it?
It's next Saturday, May 1st. Thank you for sticking with us through our reschedules.
Yes.
So tune in. It'll be 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. GMT. You'll be able to find the link. We're going to stream it in a bunch of different places, but hit up Twitter or
absolutely.
My YouTube channel or whatever, and you'll find it.
You're not going to miss it.
But we need your help.
Yes.
We want to answer your questions. Thank you to those of you who have sent in questions so far. Or tweet at us your favorite moments from past episodes. We're thinking we might go and explore some of those and laugh at our bad takes from, 5 years ago.
Yes. Oh, dear.
But whether you're tweeting us your questions or your favorite moments from past episodes, use the hashtag 100 happy hours. That's the number 100 and then happy hours. And if you do,
yes,
we're going to give away some prizes. So, you know, make sure you use that hashtag, yo.
Yes, indeed. But hey, if you would like to get in touch with us about anything else, but I can't think of why you would.
My expired car warranty, the FBI's
I beg your pardon?
Searching for me. Do you not get these spam calls? I get these spam calls.
Oh, no, I thought you were, like, admitting something. I was like, Tommy, you should be careful about that shit.
Oh, no, my car warranty was expired before I bought the car, but that's fine.
Great. Well, if you want to talk about that, please feel free. Our show Twitter and Instagram is at Jim and Tomic. That is JimAndTomic. Or you can drop us an email on our website, jimandtomic.com.
And there you can also find our merch. And we've got a Discord. If you head over to the show notes right now, there's a link that'll let you hop onto the Discord channel. Hopefully there's some great discussions about mental health and neurodiversity happening there now. It's a time-limited URL, so go find it right now. And if you miss out, don't worry. There will be more in the future.
Exactly. And hey, if you would like to financially support the show, that would be extremely appreciated. You can check out our Patreon over on our website. We have our video podcast over there for our highball $5, $4.99 or $4.50, I think it is, sterling for some weird reason. patrons, and that is our video podcast. We talk about the new Spelling Bee movie announcement, which is very exciting,
and our requisite video game and Marvel chat as well.
Yes,
but most of all, it helps us. The number one thing you can do is just tell your folks about our podcast. People find us most through word of mouth, and it's your mouths and our words. What?
Your mouth, our words.
I don't like how that sounds.
It's awful. That will not be on a t-shirt. Anyway, that's all for today, everyone. Thank you for listening, and we will see you in the 100.
Bum, bum, bum.
Cheers.
Cheers.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Would a Farsi neck do it?